Welcome to Lickin' On Leadership.
The purpose of this program is to bring to you interviews with industry leaders.
A weekly podcast bringing you leaders of the real estate and mortgage industry.
And I can't think of anyone better to join me in this role of providing this co-hosting role than one of the top leaders in our industry, and that's Mark Jones of AmeriFirst Mortgage Banking Group.
And here's the host of Lickin' On Leadership, David Lickin and Mark Jones.
Listeners, I am so excited to have with us today
Gary Orton. And Gary has been someone that I've admired for years for both leadership and not only just leadership, but how he leads. It's from such a humble position. He is just one of the most humble guys. And in an industry where we seem to have a fair amount of egos, it seems like it's just refreshing when you find someone who is just genuine about their leadership and how they go about it, the inspiration and the impact they have in people's lives. So Gary Orton, who is president of the Mortgage Finance Division of Texas Capital Bank, will be joining us. You will not want to miss this interview, especially for those of you that are interested in growing in your leadership.
Before we get to the interview, we'll have just a quick word from the sponsor that makes this podcast possible. Did you know that the impact from Hurricane Harvey, Irma, and Maria has caused historic damage to thousands of homeowners in the impacted areas? The results reported by Black Knight's data and analytics team state that there were 4.38 million mortgage properties within the Harvey and Irma FEMA-declared disaster areas. An estimate of just over 400,000 mortgage properties in Puerto Rico as a whole and the entire territory has been declared. Altogether, these properties represent approximately $755 billion in unpaid principal balances. Identifying properties damaged by these devastating storms is cumbersome and time-consuming for servicers. So in order to help, Black Knight has introduced disaster tracking capabilities within its LoanSphere MSP servicing system. The new functionality actually sweeps servicing portfolios to quickly identify properties in FEMA-declared disaster areas. If you want to learn more, call 844-474-2537 and you can ask Black Knight or email askblackknight@bkfs.com.
Today we have invited Gary Orton. Gary joined Texas Capital Bank back in 2008. Today he serves as the president and has been serving as the president of mortgage finance there at Texas Capital Bank. His leadership has been one of the main driving factors behind Texas Capital Bank's success in the mortgage industry. Prior to joining Texas Capital Bank, Gary was the national sales manager for Stewart Lending Services in Houston, Texas. His experiences also includes national management positions with First Horizon Correspondent Services, as well as a number of other large mortgage banking firms. Gary, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today.
Glad I could, David. My pleasure. By the way, before we go too far, I wanted to thank you for the introduction at the beginning of the show. And if you'll send me your address, I'll know where to send the payment for that.
Well, the truth of the matter is I do look for leaders. And one of the things that I like most about your leadership style is you don't see yourself as a leader sometimes. And I think the greatest leaders don't always see themselves as that. And I think the greatest leaders oftentimes don't realize the impact. And so part of the reason I want to invite you on is to honor you because of what leadership you brought to the bank and all of the customers of the bank. I believe, if you're not mistaken, Texas Capital Bank is the largest warehouse lender to independent mortgage bankers in the nation. Am I not mistaken?
I believe that's correct. It's very difficult to ascertain what that is, but if we're not, we're certainly in the top two or three.
For those of our listeners, Gary, that may not, hard to imagine that they don't know of you, so let's talk a little bit out and get our listeners familiar with who you are. How long have you been in the mortgage industry?
Ooh, I'm embarrassed to say, but it's coming up on 47 years. Because, see, that really
47.
47 years.
You certainly have done an outstanding job, but tell us how you got started in the mortgage industry. We want to draw more people into it. What was it that drew you into the mortgage industry?
Well, actually, I got into this industry more by an accident. It was at a job at the point in time when I started in it. I was actually working for Avco Financial Services. And again, a lot of the folks on the phone may not realize or know who Avco Financial was. But back in the day, there were finance companies such as Beneficial Finance and Household Finance and Avco Finance. And I started working for them clear back in 1971. And I was doing second mortgages for them at rates that would just be an embarrassment today. And I was the top producer in the region, and I thought, well, this is just kind of fun. I think I might want to do this for the rest of my career, and just kind of got into it from that.
That is great. So since then, your journey through the mortgage banking industry, I mentioned in your bio when I was going over that, you've held some prestigious jobs, but talk a little bit about the journey and talk about some of the things that caused you to take the choices on your journey through the mortgage industry. In other words, when you came to a certain fork in the roads, why did you go with one company versus another, and what brought you to where you're at today?
Well, like you, I have earlier in my career back a few days ago, I had some experiences with some leaders that were challenging to say the least. In fact, I probably wouldn't classify them as leaders. I classify more as managers, because to me there's a huge difference, and we can get into that later if you want. But yeah, there is a big difference in that. And I had, like you and like I'm sure a lot of people listening, have had some difficulty with some folks in the past not able to perform as what you thought you'd like to do. And I just thought, you know, I just don't want to do that. And it just taught me early on what it takes, what I didn't like. I tried to make sure I never did, to make sure that the characteristics I identified in people that really attracted me to them, you want to focus on those, and the things that you didn't, just try to avoid those. You know, and I started out when I was actually very young. I formed my own company to start with, just because I thought I've always had an entrepreneurial type of spirit. And I just thought, you know, I want to try this out, and I think I can do it. The one thing I did do, though, because I said I was in my 20s, early 20s, and I realized that I was just beginning to learn that mortgage had a T in it, that I did not know this business real well. So what I went out and did is hired people that were a whole lot smarter than I was and knew the business better than I did, and gave them a part of the company so that they had a vested interest in helping me grow it. And
Bart,
that worked very Bart. Well.
That's good. Well, I mean, so you brought some leadership to your company. You went and hired people smarter than you. But I want to focus in on leadership, and I want to start with how you define leadership, Gary.
Well, I think it's the ability to be able to share your vision and get people to understand your goals and your visions and motivate them to buy into that vision and those goals and to do the things that you're trying to get them to do, and have them believe it was their idea to do it.
Okay.
And that's where you really get motivation out of people. If you can motivate and draw the very best out of people by articulating your vision and making sure that they're a part of it, you know, the payoff on that is just phenomenal.
Yeah, I agree with you. So give us some examples, some great leaders that have inspired you.
Well, you know, at a high level, I think Winston Churchill, I'm a huge history buff. Particularly the period from 1933 to 1945, that just absolutely intrigues me.
Okay.
As to how the world could get in that position and allow things to occur that did occur. But Winston Churchill was one, he was direct, he was to the point, but he was also very inspiring. Some of the greatest speeches that you'll ever hear in history were done by Winston Churchill at the darkest points of the war for London and World War II. You know, Ronald Reagan was another one. If you think about Ronald Reagan, and probably more people are familiar with him, is that he was very self-deprecating, very personable, but was able to communicate his vision for America, and everybody bought into it because they believed him and thought he was sincere.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I mean, two great examples. You know, we look at how our country is starving for leadership, and you know, I think Donald Trump's trying to bring that leadership. He certainly was swept in with a great deal of number of votes, surprised, shocked the world. And so I'm really interested in those that have had an impact on your career, people within the industry that have helped really develop you. Did you have anyone that really mentored you early on?
Yeah, but before we get into that, there's one other person that I just can't not mention, and that has been my partner for the last 48 years. I've been married longer than probably a lot of folks have been alive on this call. But I have to tell you, Peggy is one of those people that I could never have accomplished what I have, David, without her. And I hope she's listening to this. But, you know, I've always had her support. Her belief in me has just been something that has been invaluable to me. In the business, clear back in the very beginning, I had somebody that I worked with that taught me what leadership was all about, taught me how to listen, you know, and just imparted wisdom to me that you could never learn in a book. You could only learn it by seeing somebody do it. And he just did the things that I try to do now, as I said, talking about involving people and motivating them and sharing your vision. He was very, very good at that. And I stayed in contact with him for years. He since passed away, but he was just one of the people that drove me more to this business and how to manage people and how to manage a business than any other single person did.
It's great to honor those people, but I'm really impressed that you honor your wife. As a consultant, and I go on to a new project, I always invite the spouses of the CEO. Again, we consult mostly to C-level executives, and I invite the spouse to join us in hopes of drawing them in. Because I have this theory, Gary, that the greatest advisors that we have in our life are our spouses. They see us wherever things are at, and they go, man, our relationship isn't at a good place. I don't want to involve that person now, or whether it is or not. But at some point, they know you so well. And so we draw our spouses in. And Peggy has been a fabulous partner of yours throughout for 48 years. That's amazing. I love that story.
You have to understand, you know, for example, when you relocate people, and if anybody's listening, you're ever in the position that you relocate someone, you have to understand the dynamics of relocating someone. If it's children, you generally don't have to worry about them because nobody else that's alive can adapt quicker and more easily than children. You don't have to worry about the employee because if they didn't want to be there, they wouldn't be accepting the position. The one you have to be careful of and aware of is the spouse, whether it is a male or a female. If the spouse isn't happy, it's going to be a struggle for that employee. Where Peggy has helped me so much is that most of the folks that I've relocated have been men who have had a wife, and we always, when they get here, Peggy and I together go and welcome them when they get here, try to take them out to dinner, and later on, Peggy will call them and just ask them, how's it going? Is there anything you need? And that just helps build that relationship and helps them to adapt to the new place that they are. And that can be tough. I've moved several times, and it can be difficult to do that without, you know, some stress.
Well, I think that's a good point, bringing leadership not only to the employee that you just hired, but to the whole family, because you're not moving just an employee, you're moving their whole entire family. So focusing on the spouse, that's huge. I think there's a lot of wisdom in that. Let's talk about the most important thing you can do. It is so true. It is the most important single aspect is the family unit, and we don't have enough attention being paid to that in the corporate America today. But I want to talk about the one characteristic or trait that you believe every leader must possess. What is that one characteristic? Or if you have a couple, that's fine too.
Well, I'd have to say it's probably just a calm confidence. You have to understand that everything that you do or say as a leader is being watched by someone. It could be somebody down the hall, it could be somebody outside the business, it could be a client, but as a leader, everything that you do or say is being watched. You have to understand also that crises will come and they will go. And how you react to those very often will determine your long-term success, whether you react positively or negatively, or whether the crisis is good or bad. And there is such a thing as a good crisis. And you have to understand, too, that nothing is ever as bad as you think it is, nor is it as good as you think it is. For example, you know, in the last, I try always to look at when things are going bad and it's a tough market and business is hard to get, everybody starts looking about, oh, what can we do? What have we done? What can we do to improve it? They forget to do that same analysis when things are going really good. And in my opinion, the time more important to do it is when it's going really good. Because really good times and really good volumes can mask and hide a lot of weaknesses that you don't see until it's too late.
In addition to that,
you know, when times are good like that, you generally are making enough money that you can then afford to make changes. But you first of all have to understand, as I said, just in my opinion, I'd much rather analyze what are we doing to make things so good when they're going really well, because then the conversation when it turns south is not near as hard to do.
Yeah, I think it's a really astute point that you're bringing out about success being the biggest enemy to ongoing success, because I think we can get sloppy. We look at things that brought us to the point where we're at, we failed to continue to do. So let's talk about the challenges that are facing leaders today. Is it because we have so much success going on in the marketplace? Or, you know, you have a unique perspective being one of the largest warehouse lenders in the nation and now having one of the more successful correspondent lending operations. What is your perspective on the biggest challenges facing mortgage leaders today?
We live in a very, very divisive environment and atmosphere today, unfortunately. And there's a lack of ability or desire to simply talk through an issue or talk with somebody else. And you see it in every aspect of business and society today. And I just find that very frustrating that, you know, and that's a huge obstacle to success. You're very successful or moderately successful. You have to be able to talk to others and listen and ask questions and believe that you're getting an honest answer. It's just hard to put in words how important it is that you have the ability to someone that you can trust and you know they'll be honest with you.
And that's about culture. It's about culture too. And really, how do you create that culture? You have an amazing culture there at Texas Capital Bank within the mortgage division. I'm sure it's throughout the whole bank, but I'm very familiar with what the culture that's there inside of the mortgage division. How have you been able to foster that?
You have to first of all, you have to listen and listen a lot. You know, what people will do, you can tell them what to do, when to do it, how to do it. All of that, and they will do it just like any robot will or a mechanical rote process.
Yeah.
But that's not what you want. People, once they understand, why am I doing this? When I first got here at the bank, there was not any information shared with anybody. We changed that right away. Today, we have town hall meetings, and we share everything that's gone on within the division and every aspect of the division. Whether it be good, bad, or indifferent, it gets shared. I haven't been able to do it because we've gotten large enough now. It's very difficult. But, you know, you have a lunch, and I would recommend this to anybody that's listening. Take 6 or 7 or 8 of your employees once a month and have a lunch with them. Have a box lunch brought in or a sandwich or whatever you want to do brought in. And we go into a room, and no management is allowed in there other than me. And the rules are pretty simple. We have lunch, and I tell them, you can ask me any question you want, and I'll answer it.
If do people open up in that? Answer, do you find, yeah, do you find people really opening up, or is there a fear? How do you break down? I think that's a great suggestion, Gary. But how do you break down, oh, my gosh, this is the big boss. This is the guy that controls everything. I don't want to run the risk of opening up. How have you broken that down?
Well, you have to make your humanize yourself. You know, and you do that by, I talk about my family and my career and my wife and things I've done with my grandkids so that you start to humanize yourself. And then you just ask them open-ended questions about, tell me a little bit about your children or your family. And you begin to break that down. And when you ask that question, you've got to listen. You know, I keep saying that over and over. We've all been around people that like the sound of their own voice. And they talk and they talk and they talk and they forget that God gave them 2 ears and 1 mouth for a reason.
You know? That's the right ratio. That's the right ratio. So would you say the biggest mistake witnessed by leaders that are struggling is the lack of listening, or what else would it be?
Well, it's the failure to listen. It's not able to get their ego out of the way too.
Yeah.
One of the things I've always done is to me, the two things that just will kill a leader is ego and not listening. Because again, it goes back to if people understand why and they believe that they're genuinely and honestly listened to, they will run through a brick wall for you. You also have to understand that as soon as something goes right, anytime something goes right, you always give the credit to somebody else. When it goes wrong or there's a problem, always take responsibility for it.
You own it. Yeah.
Again,
good.
You will create a loyalty, David, that you just can't fathom until you see it. Because people understand that and will learn very quickly that if I really excel at this, Gary's not going to take credit for it. He's going to stand in front of everybody and say, hey, look what Susie or Billy or Bobby did.
That's true.
The same token, if it goes off track, I'm not going to see Gary pointing his finger and say, well, look what he did.
That's a good point.
Vitally important. You know, vitally important.
Yeah, I've watched that happen there. As you guys have had a very successful stint there at times, but I've also watched a couple of times when you're in the warehouse lending business, there's always something, as Andy says, the prop doctor says, something goes boom in the night, and you go, what was that? And you've always owned it. You've always stepped in and taken that. I've got two more questions that I want to get to, and that is, what advice would you give to someone going into a leadership position for the first time? What are the things that you think that should be the number one focus and area of concentration?
Acknowledge first and foremost, and this, you know, is so vitally important, you didn't get there by yourself. You got there because other people helped you. If you were going to do it only by yourself, I can absolutely guarantee you, you would fail at it. You didn't get there by yourself. Other people helped you, and so acknowledge that and share that. Make sure people know the why. I know I said that two or three times, but you just can't emphasize enough how important it is that people understand why they're doing something.
That is so important. I love Simon Sinek's video about why great leaders inspire, and in his book that corresponds to that TED Talk is, you know, it starts with why. I think that's a great point. What are some resources that you would recommend you point to gain insights into becoming a leader? I mean, if you hire someone and they're aspiring to be a leader within your organization, what do you point them to, Gary?
Tell them always find a mentor, somebody that you have seen demonstrate what you think are great leadership characteristics, and just watch them and ask them to explain to you why they do things. And most of them, virtually all of them I know, will do that. They'll explain it to you. There's a lot of books that you can get on leadership, and those are valuable, and I would recommend reading those. But just to see it in action is a far more important thing. Just find a mentor. That's what I did, and most people that I know. You know, if you think about, for example, if you think about very successful leaders and very successful people, there's two characteristics, David, you see in every one of them without exception. And that first one for successful people is that they know how to recognize an opportunity. And the second thing characteristic you see is they have the wherewithal and the willingness to seize that opportunity.
Yep.
Same thing in leadership. If you recognize a leader, utilize that leader and seize their knowledge and grasp it, and they will share it with you. I have no doubt in my mind they will share that with you.
That principle is one that I believe in, and you get people operating in their strengths. So let's go out to the two of the people that I've pulled on for that very thing. Great amount of knowledge and subject matter experts that are just beyond anything. Alice, I want to have you jump in on this discussion. Do you have any questions specifically for Gary?
Yes, I do. And Gary, you were just talking a little bit about the idea of mentoring and how you actually build leaders within your company, right? So it's one thing when you have people really close to the top and they have the opportunity to shadow you or go to lunch with you or the other leaders at your company. How do you recommend or the type of training beyond just reading a book for that mid-level management that you want to help grow them into understanding the leadership qualities that they should, you know, they might have to actually train on, right? It's not something that's maybe second nature to them.
You know, that's really difficult to do, Alice, and I'm not exactly sure how to answer that, because what I try to do if I find somebody like that is pair them up with somebody that has those skills, or they may not be at the level that you'd like them to be at that time, but if you pair them with, they actually seem to help each other and kind of, I hate to use the word feed off each other, but they grow off each other. That seems to help. I'm just not a real big believer in formal training. Never have been a big believer in that, because theory and reality often are two different things entirely.
That's a good point. I'll tell you this. Alice is one of the things I love about Alice's training is she brings both the practical side and the both of them together, and it's like peanut butter and chocolate come together. I think she does an amazing job of doing just that. But someone else who has been able to break down complex things has been Andy Schell. Enjoyed a friendship and a partnership with him for many years. Andy, any questions for Gary as we get ready to wrap up the program?
Yes, great stuff, Gary. Thank you so much for all the pearls and note of wisdom. You know, I was thinking, as you were talking about the Mark Twain quote, that at least he's quoted as saying, it ain't what you don't know that gets you in trouble, it's what you know for sure that just ain't so. And I
that's very, you know, good. That is true.
Yeah, and so I think about leaders that I know, and I think about there's some that are doing a great job and are always kind of challenging, do they know what they need to know? And then there's another group of leaders, and I say leaders because they're in leadership, who have no clue that what they're doing is wrong and won't listen to anybody try to help them understand that there's another way. They really aren't listening, even though they say they are. So what advice can you give to people to, one, be confident that you really do know, and how to know that you really need to listen better because you aren't as good as you think you are?
I will tell them immediately, you are never going to be as good as you think you are. You know, that is not going to happen. I got to tell you, I've been doing this for 47 years, and I still sit and listen to people and hear them talk, because there's always something you can learn. I would just tell everybody, don't ever, ever become comfortable in your level of knowledge, because as soon as you are comfortable and think, I know it all, you're in trouble, especially in this business, because of the velocity that things move in this business, or any business. It doesn't matter whether it's your life or raising your kids. The minute you think you know everything, you're in trouble.
Exactly.
So I just take the position, Andy, you know what, that I am never going to get where I know it all, because there are so many more people that know so much more than I do. I've got to learn from them.
Exactly right. Well, like you guys, I'm in my 60s, and the one thing I know for sure is that I don't know. There's always something more.
Oh, yeah, you're right. And in fact, anybody that's worth their salt will acknowledge that there's always something else to learn.
So,
you know, one of the things that I'm going to open another chapter of my life here shortly, because I'm going to be retiring from the bank. And one of the things
that's where I was going to go.
Oh, is that right? Yeah. Well, one of the things I want to do is I'm going to learn some foreign languages. I'm still going to be involved in the business, because actually I'm working with David on a advisory panel that we're going to be setting up once I retire for Texas Capital Bank, as well as others in the industry. And we've got some very high level, very intelligent people that are outside of me that are involved in that. I'm looking forward to that. And I just feel there's things that I can learn there as well. But you know, there's a lot of things that I can learn. And
Gary, I'm so pleased to have had the relationship, and you're clearly a leader in our industry. One of the things that you and I have started to gather is a company called Ainsworth Advisors, and I want to have you take a moment to tell our listeners about that.
As I was getting ready to retire, David, it became very clear to me that there was a desperate need for people to understand what this business really was, the owners of companies and management of companies. If you think about, since the mid-90s or late 90s, particularly say 1997 or 98, there has been a constant steady decline in interest rates. Now, you've had the little blurps up and all of that, but when you look at a graph from 98 to about 2016, it's always been a downward trend. So there's an awful lot of companies and managers that exist in the world today that have no idea what a declining market is, or what a real natural mortgage market is. And we're headed into that in the next couple of years. I strongly believe that. If you look now, interest rates are coming up. Millennials are not purchasing as much as everyone would like them to. And I just think for the next 12 to 18 or maybe 24 months, it's going to be brutally tough.
And for that reason, Gary, we put together Ainsworth Advisors. And I'm so excited to be partnered with you in that. Talk about that.
I sat back and I just am amazed, David, at what we have. I took the amount of experience that's in those advisors, and we have a group of people that have over 320 years of experience in every aspect of the mortgage business. It doesn't matter whether it's servicing or operations or originations, any part of it, compliance, we have 320 years combined experience in that. That's a powerful group. And we're not going to act as a board of directors, because we're not going to assume governance. But what we're going to do is be offering advice on how you can survive and how you make things happen in a changing market that's going to occur in the next 12 to 24 months. We're already starting to see, as you're aware, that the decline in the markets and companies that are struggling now to remain profitable. And as this occurs, warehouse banks and lenders are going to start getting very
strict on their covenants, and they're not going to be very forgiving. Generally, if you have a bank, a warehouse line, and you miss your covenants on one quarter, you can explain it. That's it. You can get by with that. You start missing it two quarters or three quarters, you're going to have a real serious problem with that lender.
And just for those that may not understand what you're talking about by covenants, if you could just cover a couple of those, Gary, for example, first of all, there's net worth recoverance. That's the most obvious one. What about profitability? What are some of the other covenants that are in there that a warehouse line, that are going to trigger warehouse lines possibly to be removed or taken away or adjusted?
You're correct. The number one is tangible net worth, and the key word in that's tangible. You know, it has to be something that is just that, tangible and real. It can't be goodwill or something like that. It has to be a tangible number. It has to be liquidity. You can have a great tangible net worth, but if you have no cash flow, you're doomed. They're going to look for profitability. Depending on the bank, most of them will say they want to see a positive number each quarter. They're not going to say that it has to be, you know, $1 million or $10 or whatever. They just want to see a positive number. Now, they're going to want to see that number improving quarter to quarter. But if there's brackets around that number, you'd have a real challenge.
And Gary, let me ask this question, because there are those that may be struggling and looking at losses, and that can be abated, or at least bait is probably the right word. In other words, slow down and then turned around, but it's leadership and it's ideas, and that's what Ainsworth is about. Talk about that, especially with this group we have together, that's going to sell well with those companies that are struggling. If you say, well, yes, we are struggling financially, but we brought in Ainsworth advisors, and here's now who's advising me. Is that going to have an impact on a warehouse lender?
Absolutely, it will. When you look at the list of names we have, and you can say that Ainsworth is working with me, and you can demonstrate that here are some of their recommendations, here are some of the steps that we're working on taking, I know at least where I work, I would be a whole lot more willing to be working with that lender and be a little more tolerant and patient than if they were just going on doing what they'd done. You know, one of the things, the old adage is you keep doing the same thing over and over but expect a different result. That's where you get yourself in trouble.
Yeah, that is so true.
As I began to retire, I have to tell you that the mortgage banking business and banking has been very good to Gary Ort. It's a career that I've done for 47 years, and I've thoroughly enjoyed it. And when I decided to retire, it wasn't that I wanted to get out of it entirely. I wanted to pay back or pay forward some of the things that the industry did for me. And one way to do that was through Ainsworth Advisors. I want to be able to help people that are starting out in this business or been in it 10 years or 15 years. My goal would be to help them to make it to 47 years themselves so they can sit back and say, boy, this industry was good to me. How can I help it?
That's good. I love it. I love your heart, Gary. I love how you want to help and give back. I think that's important. Listeners, plug into this. I hope that you will avail yourself of this kind of wisdom and knowledge and someone who wants to help you grow your business. It's good to have you with us, Gary. Thank you.
Thank you, David, for the time. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to Licking on Leadership, a weekly podcast about leaders in the mortgage industry. Tune in next week, and thanks for listening.